So I want to start, I've been asked to speak to family responses. So you see the sort of a theme in each of the people who are speaking today. And I want to start by acknowledging the young people who took part in the research that I'll be speaking about today, because we only do this work because we have research participants who are willing to open up their lives, their hearts and their homes to the scrutiny of strangers like me, who hail from some highfalutin university across the way. And that takes incredible courage, faith and generosity. So really, really thank them before I begin. So that's me. It's wonderful to be here today as a born and bred Western Australian, because I love every opportunity that I can to get back to see my family. But when I moved away from here 21 years ago now, I was far more ambivalent about this place. Because when I then came out to my family a couple of years later as bisexual, I had to face the very real possibility that my relationship with some of my family members might never recover. The length of our family WhatsApp group thread now reveals that they did recover, and in fact, they grew much stronger for that experience, although the hurts and the harms are also things that we all live with. But I now see how their support has been so critical to me in staying well as I moved through my young adult life into my queer middle age, bringing up preteens now myself who have to learn for themselves how to navigate heteronormativity as the kids of same-sex parents. And I apologise up front, I am using queer as a shorthand sometimes for sexual and gender diversity, but I totally appreciate that there are issues with that also. And I just tend to trip up when I say LGBTIQ plus too many times. So beyond my own experience, we know from the research literature that supportive families are incredibly important to all LGBTIQ young people, because despite all of the legal reforms and all of the social change, and we've heard about some of that today, beautifully put, there is also evidence of some of decreasing homophobia and transphobia in some areas. As McConnell et al. Have put it very simply and very powerfully, families matter. So I want to look very briefly at some of the research, starting with the bad news, because family, households and relationships do remain sites of threat and hostility for far too many queer young people today. In a 2017 study, Karastatis et al. Offered an overview of the many ways in which family rejection was experienced by the Australian gay men and lesbians they surveyed, and I've listed them here in just some of their blatant and subtle forms. So is it any wonder that the research continues to show that when queer young people do not experience acceptance and support from their families of origin, they report far higher rates of mental health challenges than those who do, including increased suicidality, as we've heard. They're also more likely to describe their relationship with alcohol and other drugs as problematic. They face more housing and food insecurity. And there are compounded forms of long-term socioeconomic disadvantage that are created because of interruptions to education and employment. But, and here's a slice of good news, the counter-argument also holds true. Supportive, caring, connective relationships between queer young people and their families supports flourishing and well-being, and we do see increasing amounts of research which are describing that, are really reporting that and showing why it matters. But why don't we spend more time trying to understand what characterises those experiences of family support and belonging? As we've heard, the framing really matters. If we focus on only these forms of family rejection, it's really hard to create space for and understand what belonging might look like in the context of families. So, luckily, I've just had a paper accepted on that topic, so let me know if you want me to send it to you. It's going to be published in Family Relations, and it draws on data from the Queer Generation Study, which is the study which Rob mentioned earlier. It was led by Peter Aggleton, who wishes he could be here, in which we interviewed people born in the 70s or born in the 90s. About growing up queer in urban and regional Australia. So this paper focuses just on the New South Wales data and only the sexually diverse participants and focuses just on experiences of family belonging. So it's a subset of that broader group. I've just got a couple of quotes for you. So Taya is a queer woman in her early 20s. I'll read the longer quote. She said, "When I first came out, I was 16, and my mum had asked me, 'Do you like that friend?' And I kind of panicked. She wasn't trying to be mean about it. She just kind of said, so I called a helpline to ask, like, how to talk to you about it. And I was like, oh, why? My mind went to, why would you call a helpline? Like, that makes it sound like something's wrong with me. So then, so she describes this as really a problem in the way that they reacted. And then she says, I came out when I started dating my current partner by writing a letter, and I left it in my parents' room. They texted me later and they said, we got your letter, and that's lovely, that's fantastic. And now we both live at my parents' house because my partner had some problems with her family. My mum was like, well, why don't you just get her stuff and just live here? And I'm like, okay, cool. So although she describes coming out to her parents as a bit of a drama in her life, I think we can agree there's a lot to celebrate here. Taya didn't feel that her parents would not support her. She was shocked that they might think it was a problem that she was dating a girl and actually want to seek some outside help to work out how to respond well. The fact they did manage to get it right the second time, she gave them that opportunity, and they've even taken her girlfriend into their home. She describes it simply as something that she should be able to expect as her birthright, as a valued member of this family. And I want to move to a different project now. This project is called the My Health, Our Family Study. And in this project, we interviewed people who'd been diagnosed with a bloodborne virus, HIV, hepatitis B or hepatitis C, to find out what family means to them and also what these still stigmatised infections mean to their families. So there are two quotes that I want to share. The first is from Connor, who is a gay man who is 27, and he was talking about when he disclosed his HIV diagnosis to his family at 24. And the second quote is from his stepmother. So Connor said, within a month of my diagnosis, I told my stepmom so that she could get ready for the aftermath of me telling Dad, and that went really well. And then I told my sister, I told everyone, all my family, within a week. I didn't want to hide. I didn't want to go on holidays and have to hide pills, or I didn't want to have to stop myself from doing certain things on social media. And at the time, I had a 10-year-old brother. And he didn't tell him right away. I didn't think he was ready. It's a bit of a complex area because it's to do with sex. So I don't know. I waited until he was a bit older. So that was a consideration. And then Natasha, his stepmother, said in a separate interview, we were all very concerned about him, because he had mental health issues that were getting worse as his ice use was getting worse. His ice use was linked to his sexuality. So, yeah, he told us over the phone, but he had sort of already indirectly educated us that HIV wasn't the death sentence it was back when we were teenagers. So it's sort of a bit like, oh, yeah, well, we're not really surprised. I suppose it's a bit like having cold sores, isn't it? You're just going to have to manage it now. And he's a very open person. He uses his life trying to help others. I think he sometimes just needs a little bit of approval coming back to us that everything's okay. But he's got really good supports within his gay community. He doesn't have a lot of friends, but the ones he has are really good to him. So there's quite a complex experience being described here and a range of issues that come together. It wraps up some pretty challenging ideas for many in our communities about queer sexuality, drug use and bloodborne viruses. But this is another good news story about how families can respond with love and support, adapting to very new, potentially quite frightening information about their loved one by accepting and performing the important role that they recognise that they can play in reassuring the young person in their family that everything is okay, that they'll be there for him, but also recognising that he can manage things himself as he prefers with the support of his community also. So I'm going to run out of time, but I want to tell you one more story. Because even among the stories from participants, and remember, this is looking just at the stories of people who described feeling belonging and acceptance in their families of origin. We have plenty of other stories also. But among these ones, we did see some families provide a form of support which came with a kind of set of sort of implicit conditions, or were more partial and precarious than some of these. So the next quote comes from Zoe, who is a lesbian trans woman who was in her 20s. She was 20 in her early 20s when she took part in a Queer Generations interview. She described being quite strategic about her family relationships, how she managed them. She said family, we asked her about what supported her in growing up, and she said family was really important to me when I was growing up. The church was also really important to me. That probably wasn't the best thing for me, you know, as a trans person, because they were the two factors that kind of kept me in the closet. And I haven't really talked to my mum in 4 years, so she doesn't know that I've come out. My dad, I've got an okay relationship with him, but I live with my grandma, my dad's mum. The people that I, when I was first coming out, assumed would take it the worst, they actually took it the best. Like my grandma and grandpa, they were both completely supportive of me. They said, we just love you, like whatever you want, we just love you and we'll support you. And there's been times throughout my childhood when my mum was like really quite emotionally abusive of me, and I sort of stepped away from that. She's come back again and said, look, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. And every time I come back, she always does it again. So I'm just sort of over it at this point, really. I've given her so many chances, and she's always turned around and not only done it again, but made me feel bad for leaving. So Zoe's story reminds us that even experiences of partial family belonging can be valued by a young person who needs both emotional and practical support to make it through to their full independence. I mean, a place to live is a really big thing. I'm in awe of Zoe's ability, though, to recognise she can't do well if she remains in her mother's life. But it is safe to remain open to and accepting of the love from her grandparents and to be really strategic about that. So I'm also reminded in this quote that the split within this family reflects the broader split that we continue to face between those who accept and value sexuality and gender diversity as a vital dimension of who we are as a nation, and those who appear to be holding firm to a belief system which judges those forms of difference as intolerable, even when expressed within their own families. So this reminds us when thinking about belonging again. As Vanessa May has put it, belonging is more than just an individual feeling. It's a hotly contested political issue with collective consequences. So in conclusion, while we must recognise and celebrate that there are families who embrace their queer young people and they do provide acceptance and support in the forms in which they're desired, we need to also be mobilising to challenge the social and political conditions that continue to encourage some families to do harm, which right now, as we've heard about, the Religious Freedoms Bill is one of those. This is really being directly focused on undermining the rights and well-being of transgender and gender-diverse young people and their families. So thank you to everybody who made these two studies possible, and thanks for listening.